Wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Sunday morning wake-up call. We always appreciate your time, your love, especially on a nice, sunny day. Our conversation today is one that I've been wanting to do for a while. I think it's informative. It's going to be difficult for some, including me, which is why you'll probably hear me tear up and get that snotty sound in my nose several times during the hour. Please bear with me, because we're going to be talking about grief with two local counselors. We have Margaret Edwards with us. She's a trauma counselor at UVA's Women's Center. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we also have Rennie Bond. She's a bereavement counselor at Hospice of the Piedmont. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, you're both going to have to get so much closer to those microphones.
Is this better?
That's better. That's better.
How's this, Rick?
Oh, so much better.
Okay, good.
Because even though it's a difficult topic, we still want everybody to hear what we're talking about. And as Rusty said, there's some pieces of equipment here at WNRN that are in dire need of replacement. They're also, not to make light of the topic, but they're near the end of their life. And so we're having a little bit of grief over the staticky sound in the air, but it's an important topic. Bear with us. Thank you so much for your pledge during the spring fund drive. Some of the things we'll go towards. So Margaret Edwards, Rennie Bond here. We talk about grief on the Sunday morning wake-up call. Ladies, I want to know the difference between sadness and grief and depression. So who can, the two of you take care of that. Let's define some of those.
Okay, I'm Rennie Bond. It depends on who you're asking and who has the feeling. Okay. Those words are used interchangeably. To simplify it, I use sad as that everyday feeling. There might be a loss that you can identify, or maybe you just woke up on the wrong side of the bed, or you're feeling blue. Or for me, I felt sad when the leaves fell off or the blossoms fell off my cherry tree. So that's a very common thing, and it goes with down in the dumps and the blues. But people often use the word depressed to describe that feeling. So that's the one.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You want to talk to that?
Grief, and grief in contrast, is really both a physical and an emotional reaction to loss specifically.
Yeah.
So it's quite different. There's a situational stressor that
An identifiable loss. Absolutely.
Yep. Whether it's an unacknowledged one by society or not, it's a loss to you.
Right. Yeah. And for me, that can be mild or that can be profound. It can be complicated by other factors. But you can always tell there's a loss.
Right. Depression's a little more complicated.
Yeah, it is. Okay. Depression, I use as a clinical term, almost a medical term. It's an illness. And it really is a pervasive feeling that takes over your whole life. It is characterized by helplessness, by hopelessness, whereas grief is about something you've lost. Depression is about the self. So the other really significant part of depression is the sense of worthlessness or meaningless. And this is pervasive. It affects your whole life. It affects your life energy. And this is the kind that we get concerned about and really think of additional help, because this is where suicides can happen.
Yes. And it also can affect immune function at a lesser severity, and it can affect ability to focus, concentrate. So it affects everyday functioning in a way that sadness, not so much. And where grief becomes complicated, that's where you worry about depression.
Can you move from one to the other? Can sadness become grief? Can grief become depression?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Especially the grief can become depression, I think.
Yeah, and if you're, sadness just kind of comes and goes.
It's the weather.
Part of grief and part of depression. But I think that depression often can start with an identifiable loss.
But the significant key is then the focus becomes on the self rather than the lost object.
And if you're depressed for other reasons, whether physiological or other, and then you have a sudden loss, it can quite complicate the grief, or both the grief and the depression.
So you move back and forth.
Right. But sadness is more like, you know, weather in a sense, that it comes, it goes, it's sometimes for identifiable reasons, it's part of the human experience. It makes joy feel a little sharper as well. So I don't know that we would ever want to not feel sad some.
Absolutely.
Depression's a whole different story.
Yeah. In fact, you couldn't. It's right. The opposite of happiness, and you can't feel happy all the time.
Exactly. There's contrast.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Again, our guest today, Margaret Edwards from UVA's Women's Center, Rennie Bond from Hospice of the Piedmont. We are talking about grief. Also talking a little bit about sadness and depression, because it seems like what I'm hearing is that if we're going to talk about grief, we almost have to speak a little bit about sadness and depression because they are fringe parts of the conversation, correct?
Well, go ahead, Reddy.
Well, how we define and use grief, it's got... it affects our whole body. Sadness
is part of it. That's an emotional part. But grief affects our physical part, how we think, our spiritual life, our behaviors, our relationships. So sadness would be a much smaller part of grief.
It would be like, you know, if you had a major illness, if you were running a little bit high of a fever, a fever is a symptom. So I think sadness in that instance might be its part and parcel of it, but it's by no means the major,
right,
meaningful part of grief.
Yeah.
It's a part of grief, but it's not the major focus.
Though commonly speaking, we associate sadness with grief. We just are not always aware that grief is so much more pervasive and affects so much more of the human experience.
Yeah.
Why did the two of you get into this? Margaret, as a trauma counselor, Rennie, as a bereavement counselor, was there an incident in your lives that led you to this? Was there a conversation in your education that took you into this?
Shall I go first, Rennie?
Go ahead.
Okay. So a series of events, probably, as well as some intellectual interest. Early in my career, actually my academic career, I decided to study international relations and international conflict. And as in the course of my career and some things that happened sort of both in my family and where my husband and I's jobs took us, gradually kept focusing closer and closer into the individual. So when I decided to go back to school and do a career change, this felt natural. I'd done a lot of volunteer work actually with hospice. Mm-hmm. Also had some family members who had been through long chronic illness and watched the grief that they experienced as their bodies changed and their sense of self, those diseases, how those changed their sense of self. So I became very interested, and it's kind of one thing led to another. When I finished my degree, I decided to stay at the UVA Women's Center because I was specifically interested in how trauma in particular causes a very, very strong grief reaction. And it is both incredibly important to be able to sit with somebody and walk with them as they work through that, and also just amazing how people can, in fact, heal from it. So that's why that's where I got my vocation.
And Rennie?
Yeah, I have a little different pathway. I was a clinical social worker or a psychotherapist for a number of years, and I came to a quasi-retirement. But during that time, my father died. He used hospice at the very end. I was not living in the same state, so I was not really connected, but I heard about it. And then a cousin of mine died, and I actually was a primary caregiver. Again, a little taste of hospice. So I got intrigued by hospice, and what happens is I keep coming back to hospice. I keep falling into it, first as a volunteer, and then on the staff, and it just, it's very meaningful and rewarding to be able to sit there and be with the person who's having a difficult time and make a difference.
Yes, exactly.
Trauma versus bereavement. Again, our guest today... Margaret Edwards, who's a trauma counselor at UVA's Women's Center, Rennie Bond, a bereavement counselor at Hospice of the Piedmont. For many people, certainly including myself, when you talk about grief, the first thing that comes to mind is a death of a friend, a family member, we'll get into this shortly, a pet, rather than something a traumatic. There seems to be a separation of the two, at least the first thing that comes to mind. It doesn't mean that you never think of a traumatic experience as grief, but you caught me off guard before the show, Margaret. We were talking about why does the UVA Women's Center have something to do with grief? And you said, well, wait, we're talking about trauma in that sense. Can you explain that to me a little bit?
Sure. So bereavement is, I think, well, I'm going to let you be the expert on that one, Jenny.
Right.
But on the case of trauma, trauma is essentially what happens when you have an essential loss of safety, or when you you lose a sense of what your life was like before the thing that happened to you. So the trauma is both, I guess, the event. In my case, I predominantly see students, staff, and faculty who have experienced interpersonal violence, particularly sexual assault. And there is a fundamental loss of your understanding of who you are in the world and the safety in of the world as you knew it before the incident. And that has to be grieved because it does change your outlook on life quite a bit. And it does cause a full-fledged, full-body grief reaction in most people.
Right, because I asked, why did you have a grief counselor? And you're like, well, I'm not really a grief counselor. I'm a trauma
counselor. Well, I'm both, actually, because in my eyes, I feel like it's the whole person. You treat the whole person. So usually as part of a team. But
and Rennie, as with UVA, not with UVA, with Hospice of the Piedmont, mm-hmm. bereavement seems to me to be simple. It's easily understood, anyway, not a simple process, but easily understood as to why that would be necessary. Are there parts to that that do not fill the easy circular hole?
There are many parts, and that is often what we call complicated grief. If you want a short differentiation between trauma and grief, for instance, if there's a violent death, I remember working with some kids who were in a car that crashed. Some members were killed. The kids who survived were very much grieving the loss of the friends, but they also watched this violent death, which really overwhelmed their coping abilities. Now, that's grieving. It's trauma. It's a complicated situation.
Yes, and it takes more than simply processing the story, usually,
right,
to get past those. Mm-hmm. Some of them. Less.
And there are therapies that actually do mm-hmm. that.
Again, our guests today, Margaret Edwards and Rennie Bond, as we talk about grief here on WNRN and the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll open up the phone lines in just a few minutes. It's 11:12 here at the station. I want to talk about expected versus unexpected grief, because I always think that there's got to be a different way to deal with it. If you know if someone has cancer, and you know that we're near the end, the physicians say that they have X number of weeks to live, versus the car accident that Rennie, you spoke with, especially for younger lives. Are there different ways? Are there different signs of grief that go along with this? Let's take some time to talk about the expected versus unexpected.
Okay, there are differences. Yeah. And neither is good or bad, and neither is better or worse. It depends on the individual. But for the person who can expect the grief, there is a chance to say goodbye. There's a chance to tie up the loose ends, to build bridges, to mend bridges, as it were, and to prepare to some extent. But so many people tell me that you can never be really prepared.
Right.
So the unexpected grief, you don't have the chance to say goodbye and to tie up the loose ends. Sometimes with the unexpected grief, though, you don't watch somebody suffer where you might in the expected grief. So again, it's complicated. It depends on the individual. It depends on the circumstance.
And it depends on, if in the case of anticipated, I would think the interaction between the person who is dying, who's mm-hmm. grieving that perhaps, or certainly grieving the fact that other people are grieving it. Yeah. So it gets very, it's an interplay back and forth, I think.
Yeah.
Versus it's a totally different stage when the person's passed and you're
but,
left
but
with
what they go
processing.
Through, what people go yes. through grieving is similar.
Yes.
Although each person is unique
exactly.
and it depends on the person rather.
And essentially there's meaning making that has to happen
yeah.
before and after. And I think you can't predict how that path's going to go. At least I've never been able to do that in my life or watch other people's.
Right.
You talked about saying goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a key part of grief? Must you say goodbye? Or, and again, I realize that we say each person handles their grief differently. So when I say must each person, I'm not talking about 100%, but I am talking about a very large percentage of those going through grief. Is this a key part, being able to say goodbye? People always say, oh, you need to be able to talk to your father who you had a poor relationship with. You need to, you know, that's the Hallmark TV, is that they need to, you know, apologize to one another or whatever the relationship situation is. Is that part of what happens?
It's part of what happens. Is it necessary? Obviously not, because sometimes you can't.
Exactly.
It is very helpful if you can say goodbye, and that's the mending fences. It doesn't always happen, even if you have
right.
a chance to do it. So it is very nice to be able to have that picture-perfect dying that you see on TV with the goodbyes and I love yous, but it's not necessary, and obviously
well,
some people can't do it.
I was saying, some people just can't do it for a lot of complicated
reasons.
So mm-hmm. there is one thing about the saying goodbye that gets mixed up a little, I think, sometimes. The goodbye before the person dies is clearly a goodbye. You don't exactly know when it's going to be. There is this notion in common literature that you're supposed to let the person go after they die, and that's part of the goodbye. And I guess I take some issue with that, in that I think you make meaning, you make room for that, your love for that person in your life, but there is no, like, letting go and tidying it up and putting it in a box so easily, I think.
You know, you describe that as you're never healed from grief. You're never cured.
It's not
you
a
learn
disease.
How to cope with it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean giving up the memories of the person or the experiences.
Right. Or stop loving
had.
Them, really. It's just you love them in
exactly.
a different way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And here we are, 11:17 on the Wake Up Call. Our conversation today about grief with Rennie Bond and Margaret Edwards, two local counselors here in the Charlottesville area. We'll be glad to open the phone lines, 979-0919-877-WNRN Rocks.
And support for WNRN today coming from T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing, an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. T&N Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And WNRN is supported by Jefferson Theater, presenting R5, featuring Ross Lynch from Austin and Alley with Alex Iono, Taylor Matthews, and Sunderland. That's Tuesday, April 16th. The sunny sounds of R5 come from the close-knit band of the Lynch family siblings. Tickets for Tuesday's show at jeffersontheater.com. All right, back in action with our guest today, Rennie Bond, Margaret Edwards, as we talk about grief. Ladies, you were talking about ways that people deal with grief, the variety of ways. Not everyone deals with it the same. I had a little section of my notes talking about receiving versus providing help. And I went online to, to the hospice website. Again, Hospice of the Piedmont. Rennie, do you know the website address by heart?
It's HOPVA, HOPVA.org. Actually,
Margaret knows it better than I do. Yeah.
All right. Some of the things that I found that were interesting, things that people say that aren't always the best thing to say. One of which is, call me if you need anything. And a part of, there's a quarterly booklet that goes out, magazine that goes out, Horizon, and this was a section in one of those. Call me if you need anything is what you say to someone suffering from grief, and the reply in that quarterly said, I don't know what I need. So let's talk about this for a little while. The proper and improper thing to say when you're talking about someone suffering from grief, and those who are trying their best, who they want to offer any help but also aren't sure what to do.
Yeah, and that's what gets in the way often. I think there are three key things that I would offer or suggest. Most important is to listen.
Absolutely.
It's just to listen. It's very hard for us to close our mouths and not say anything, but that can be most supportive.
Absolutely. In fact, it's, if anything, that our nervousness is what makes us want to chatter.
Exactly.
And if you just take a few deep breaths and listen, it's amazing how it can be.
But there aren't there those suffering from grief who don't want to say anything? Or I mean, do you just sit in the room with them and read the paper and...
Absolutely.
I mean, is that appropriate?
Without question, right?
And the second thing is just be there. Be there in any way that works. And sometimes that quiet, that's being quiet. The third thing, alluding to what you said in the beginning, is be specific. It's don't just call if you need me, but can I walk the dog for you today? Or can I do this errand for you? Or can I bring you this food? Those are the specific things that you can do.
Yeah, that's right. And sometimes, you know, even if it's just sitting next to a person watching television with them for an hour, it's really a presence, I think, that's healing.
How do you know when you've overstayed your welcome? I mean, you go for an hour because you go to talk, you go to listen for the hour, and there is no conversation, and so you sit to provide the sturdy presence that you believe is needed. How do you know when that time to go versus the person dealing with their grief who just has to, it takes a long time for them to want to talk?
Well, when I've been in that situation, I ask if it's all right if I can come, and then I say, how about if I stay for about 20 minutes, half an hour, an hour? And then I go unless they say, please stay. So setting a sort of an expectation or asking them, how long would you like me to stay, even better, you know? And they say, I don't know. Then I'll say, how about if I'll be here for about half an hour, and then we'll see how it goes.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the others that I found interesting in the Horizon? I keep wanting to call it a quarterly or a magazine put out by Hospice of the Piedmont, is people say, stay strong, when in fact I feel numb.
Well, there's so many cliches we use, and I think it's in our culture, we think we have to fix things and make it better. So we say that what might work for us or some cliche we have learned. Again, if we can pay attention to the person who is grieving rather than what our own need to fix is, and just really listen.
Absolutely. And avoiding statements, even if you feel very strongly that the person who's died is in a quote-unquote better place, even people with strong faith traditions do not hear that as anything other than being shut down in most cases. So sitting with person just saying, you know, if anything, I am so sorry, which is congruent to what you're actually feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, trying to resist that urge to try to fix is overwhelming at times, but it just... You'll do better if you do it. The good news is there's almost always a do-over, as long as you don't say something thoroughly horrible.
If
you're well-meaning, right. Because most people recognize you're being well-meaning.
Got a couple more here. Our guest, again, Margaret Edwards, she's a trauma counselor at UVA Women's Center. Rennie Bond with Hospice of the Piedmont, a bereavement counselor. And I have two or three more here for ways of providing help. But what about ways of receiving help? When people say the inappropriate thing, you know, or one that doesn't do any good, when they say, call me if you need anything, and you have no reply, what do those suffering from grief do in this instance, if anything?
often they don't do anything, they don't say anything, but they then might just take their grief more inside. And I, as the counselor, might hear their anger at somebody who has said that, who obviously they think doesn't mean it or can't help
or even
them.
Just it doesn't take away from the fact that the person isn't here.
Yeah.
You know, so that can be hard. I think from the in terms of receiving help, that is actually far harder in some ways than giving it, isn't it, Rennie?
I think particularly those of us in caregiving professions have a terribly difficult time receiving help. But yes.
And I found, so I had a very close friend who lost a child, and she had the grace and wisdom to realize she needed to ask a couple of her close friends to be the filter, in a sense, mm-hmm. and to assign people tasks. And this was in a very small town in Illinois where everybody, you know, they hear of any kind of tragedy and they immediately bring you a hot dish. And so that there was a filter there, so she could be gracious, accept help. She knew people needed to do that as part of their grief, mm-hmm. but she just couldn't be overwhelmed with 60 visitors in her little living room. So asking for close people to help be your team, in a sense, and helping
screen.
Screen, really, essentially, mm-hmm. right, and screen mm-hmm. the calls, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Do you mention the name of the deceased, or do you avoid that? And go ahead. I see you shaking your head.
Depends on the tradition.
You're nodding your head. I know the answer to that.
It depends on the tradition. There are some Native American traditions where that is inappropriate, but for, I'd say, many parts of American society, most of us would want to not have that person forgotten and erased, and we're supposed to be fine in 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. I think not only naming the name, which actually keeps the memory alive in a way which is a plus, but also using the word death and dead, as opposed to something like passing on or in a deep sleep or some other words that we use in this society.
Right.
So I think being honest and being real is so important.
Because it invites the person who's grieving to speak about what's going on inside of them, which mm-hmm. is otherwise they feel, you can feel very shut down when everybody wants mm-hmm. you just to talk about the weather.
I've got a wonderful poem that speaks to that. I'll share with you at some point.
You're not going to share with me?
No, I didn't bring it.
Oh, right.
But I'll send it.
Mary Oliver has some marvelous poems.
Yes, she does.
I commend them to anybody who's interested in the subject.
So who is that? Yeah.
Mary Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go online and Google that.
You
and
sure
find
can.
Some.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Again, our guest today, Rennie Bond. She's with Hospice of the Piedmont, a bereavement counselor, Margaret Edwards, a trauma counselor with UVA at the Women's Center. You're welcome to call. I'd love to hear your story about a situation, whether you are receiving or accepting, dealing with grief. 979-0919, 877-WNRN Rocks. Maybe you have a question for our guest today. Ladies, I want to talk about different kinds of grief. I asked about sadness versus grief versus depression, but to me, and again, part of the hour is to educate myself because I always feel that I am representative of many people in knowing just enough to not know everything that I should. So you lose a family member, a close family member, whether it's a parent, whether it's a sibling, whether it's a child, or in fact, in some cases, I would differentiate between parent and sibling to that of a child. Is that true? Are there different ways of dealing with grief? If you're a parent who's lost a child, people always say, that you should never lose a child first. Accurate, inaccurate? Are there different problems with the grief or different parts of grief that go with that?
Well, I don't believe in any shoulds regarding grief.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I do think it's often harder losing a child for a couple of reasons. One, as parents, we're supposed to protect our kids, even if they're grown up. And so there's some sense of failure if we haven't. The other is that people younger are not supposed to die. We can accept that somebody in their 90s or 100s dies, not always easily, but children are not supposed to. That seems to be more traumatizing, more difficult for all of us. So, but we still go through grief. It's still many of the same expressions of that loss, but
I think it's more complicated with children.
I think often.
And siblings, depending on the relationship, very often people, that is your longest person you might have known other than your parents. So that depends on what age, I suppose, too. Yeah. So I think every grief is a little bit different, honestly, of the people that I've worked with, and certainly my own.
Right, and with siblings, sometimes it's a close relationship. Sometimes it's conflictual, both of which can be difficult. Sometimes it's kind of distance, and therefore it's not as difficult, right, as complicated.
Yeah. Rennie, you said you don't believe in shoulds. But there are shoulds in terms of things that you should not say, correct? We talked about those just a moment ago. It's not helpful. So you should not say, call me if you need anything. You need to be more specific, correct? But are there shoulds on the positive side that you should do this?
Well, if you have to use the word, I think you should listen. And yes, that would be the key word. You should be there and you should listen.
I would agree with that one, especially if you can be there without doing your own grief work at the expense of the other person's.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But you should be there and listen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the grieving process, and we've mentioned several times during the first half hour of the program that there is no specific process, correct? Did I hear that properly, mm-hmm, that each individual has their own unique method and I want to say strategy, although that's probably not the best way to phrase it, for
experience,
accepting grief.
Planned.
Experience,
right.
Thank you. But how do you know, or is there a way to tell with someone who is said, who is putting forth the demeanor of that their grief is over, when that's probably not true? Or for someone who might have their grief seems to be still going on a little too long for the emotions that they remain in?
That's a hard one to answer. I don't believe there are stages and phases of grief. I think they overlap and they repeat and repeat until you are finished with them. And that's such an individual thing. I think there's kind of a beginning, which is when you learn about it and when you're often numb and overwhelmed. I think there's a middle stage where there are tons of emotions. We call it the roller coaster ride of grief. And then I think there comes a time when you're never cured, you're never over it, but when you have reconciliated, when you have adapted to a new life and feel as though there's light at the end, right, of the tunnel and you're moving on, often that's a way, you found a way of keeping that person alive for you or alive within you or in your memory. But I would trust the person. I would ask them and talk to them. If people don't want to be helped and nobody has to be helped, then their experience is more important than what you're just casually observing and you think might be right or wrong.
If anything, I mean, the old counselor trick is, not trick, but they told the whole purpose of it is you reflect back the person's experience and then they can hear it and either affirm it or that maybe drives them to do a deeper reflection. So people can be fine on the surface. We all have to function in this world, mm-hmm, and then but still be carrying a lot of grief. And it can be confusing to the people who are mostly latching onto the, oh, they're fine because they're here at work or they're here at the softball game or whatever. So just attending, I guess, really helps people figure out their, and people do this at very different stages. Some people don't dig really deep in until a couple, months after the event.
In fact, it can be longer. I remember doing a group where there was a woman, a young woman, whose father had died 10 years before. Right. And she had gone right on after that death to take care of her mother, so really hadn't talked about her father's loss. She came to a group and worked it through by repeating what she needed to again and again in the group 10 years later.
Yeah. And they can get unstuck that way.
Yeah.
Right.
But, and again, some of this may be, me watching too many movies, but there are those experiences that we have seen before, again, whether they're a coworker or a movie character who has an important person in their life who, again, is passes on appropriate, or should I say suffers death?
Died, maybe.
Who dies, and it's within just a few months that they're in a new relationship. Mm-hmm. Or someone who 10 years later is still, doesn't seem to have been able to find a new relationship or gotten close to anyone else because of the death of their original partner or sibling or parent. Are there not? Would you? And again, there, some of these are movie characters, but I think that if we asked enough people that we could find a real life person who has, who fills each of those roles mm-hmm. that I just put forth, can, as counselors, can you say, yes, that is much too quick of a new relationship, and there are incidents or highlights or, you know, movement or gesture that they make, conversation that they have that tells me that they haven't finished with the first bit of grieving and they're a little too quickly with this new relationship, or that 10 years, you know, we need to do something here to talk about this so that you can get a little further along in the grieving process. Is that not possible, or is that, were we still talking about the unique aspect of each person?
First of all, we are talking about the unique aspect. I would generally think that if someone significant died and the survivor got into a relationship within 3 months, generally that seems early, as though it is aborting the grief process. But I remember working with a guy whose wife died of Lou Gehrig's disease. She'd been ill for a long period of time. He started dating a month after she died, and 9 months later, he married the woman, and they have a happy marriage at least 6 or 7 years later. So you can't say absolutes for either. And somebody who is 10 years out, maybe the grief has left them unable to be vulnerable to another loss or relationship. Obviously, we protect ourselves after we've been hurt. And you know, you'd have to talk to that person and work with them, and maybe they don't want another relationship.
Right. And really, we tend to see, at least I tend to see people who are coming in because they're exploring whether that's an issue or not, mm-hmm. right? So that's mm-hmm. up to them to decide, I guess, am I able to be vulnerable again?
And do I want to?
Or do I want to? Mm-hmm. Or in the case of, I jumped into this relationship, and I'm feeling like I'm driving it forward and reverse and sideways, and so we just work through that. As that person's friend, again, I think you walk with them, and if they ask for your advice, that's a tricky situation, actually, isn't it? Because you're not the one that deals with the consequences.
That's why
the person
I brought in the counselors talk about the topic.
Yeah, that's what you let them know as a friend or as a counselor. You'd say, I might do it this way, but it might not be right for you. So what do you think? And help them explore what it's like
exactly.
for them.
I think that works for whether it's a friendship or a counseling relationship.
You know, they have, I don't know what they're called, but they have anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous or mm-hmm. Drug Anonymous or Gambling mm-hmm. Anonymous for people who don't actually suffer the actual addiction, but for the family members. Mm-hmm. Are there classes, counseling classes to go with the friends where the friend can come mm-hmm. in because they're concerned about the grief that their neighbor or partner at work or et cetera is? They're concerned about how that's going?
We've had that happen, but it really is not what our groups are set up to do.
And at UVA, for people who want to figure out how to help somebody, they can certainly go to the EAP program, the Employee Assistance Program. And frequently students come to me asking me that kind of question. Yeah. I should say frequently. Every year I've had at least one person or more come and say, we're really concerned about our roommate. So you can ask somebody. Of course, you know, clergy are often asked the same kinds of questions. There are some good books out there. I don't know of any groups for friends of. There are groups here in Charlottesville like Compassionate Friends that are specifically helping parents who have lost a child. Do you know of any others other than hospice groups?
Not a group. We do short-term bereavement counseling, groups. And somebody could call and ask that kind of question in that capacity.
Right.
11:39 here on the Wake Up Call. It says WNRN. We're talking about grief. with our guests today, Rennie Bond and Margaret Edwards. In just a moment, I want to talk about pets. We talked about family. We've talked about children, parents, and other issues. But I want to come back and talk about pets.
WNRN thanks Just Curry for their support of independent music radio. Just Curry has just opened at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Just Curry is back and serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday. You can find Just Curry on Facebook.
We invite you to join Piedmont Council for the Arts in celebrating the Charlottesville arts community at Spring for the Arts on Wednesday, April 24th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at City Space, featuring a silent auction, gallery exhibition, and live performances by Mark Campbell and some of PCA's rising stars. Spring for the Arts ensures that PCA continues to connect artists, audiences, and arts organizations in our region. Enjoy signature drinks and hors d'oeuvres by Harvest Moon Catering, plus beverages from Market Street Wine Shops and Blue Mountain Brewery. City Space is located at 105th Street Northeast on the downtown mall. Tickets are now available at charlottesvillearts.org/RSVP. For more information, please call 434-971-2787. I'm Elizabeth, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
All right, back with our guest today, Rennie Bond. She is a bereavement counselor with Local Hospice of the Piedmont. We also have Margaret Edwards. She's a trauma counselor at UVA's Women's Center. Ladies, we'll talk about pets, because one of the things that prompted this show, me trying to put it together, is a close friend who lost what, to me, was certainly, if not her key relationship, certainly in the top group of an animal that had been in her life, from puppy to having to be put to sleep 14 years. And you know, I don't know what to do. I have an animal myself. We talk about Lazarus all the time here on air. And in this case, my friend Lazarus, Rennie's looking up at the guy. Lazarus is my dog's name.
I got that after five seconds.
But my friend's dog, you know, this 14-year relationship coming to an end. And for some people, those who are not pet owners, it's like, we'll just get another dog. You know, let the couple months go by and get another dog. Are there different situations of grief that take happening with an animal rather than a parent, a sibling, etc.?
I think the primary thing is that it is not, as you're pointing out, it's not always acknowledged as a serious loss. Mm-hmm. And for many people, it is a very serious loss, just as you pointed out.
Yeah, I think it's like any other grief. Sometimes it's highly significant, and sometimes it's rather mild. And I think you would treat it, you as the friend, the way you treat any other loss. Again, the listening, the being there, the being specific, the not forcing her to talk if she doesn't want to.
And I think, as I pointed out earlier, or found when doing my homework, is I'm pretty sure that I called and said, call me if you need anything. So error number one within, you know, 30 minutes of finding out that this had taken place. So for many people, for a large percentage, Margaret, as you said, or shouldn't say large, but for a percentage of the population, it's not the same depth of the relationship, and so therefore doesn't get the same amount of grief mm-hmm. that goes with a family member dying. Mm-hmm. Are there different ways for the individual suffering from the grief? Are there different ways to deal with it?
I'm thinking being specific again.
Mm-hmm. No, but different from the
bereaver
versus being a parent. Oh. If you lose a pet, do you have the same steps, the same conversations that you would if it had been your parent who had passed away?
Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. It depends on the relationship you had with the pet. If the pet had been like your child, like a big part of your life, you would have the very same feelings. As Margaret said, society doesn't recognize that often, but other pet owners do.
Right. And are happy to talk with you about the pet.
Absolutely.
And so you need to find, I mean, as somebody who's lost a couple of dogs I was very close to, it's really helpful to talk to other dog owners and be able to talk to, about the dog by name or the pet by name.
And what happens if, as a worker, and you tell your employer that my parent has passed away, and so you're given time to whether it's not just the, and I hate using this word, logistics, but it's now become part of our conversation, the issues that go forth with the situation of losing a parent, as opposed to calling and say, I need the next week off and I expect to be, you know, sad and grieving for weeks afterwards because I've lost my pet.
Yeah. The policies vary, I'm sure, across workplaces, but it is a difficult subject, I think, for workplace managers and actually even knowing how to be able to even ask if you need a day or two or longer.
Yeah, we have a term for it. We call it disenfranchised grief. Loss of a pet would be one. Loss of some distant relative you wouldn't think would be important, but it could be essential for you. So it is an insensitive community, and I think you're right. If you've got an employer who can hear and listen to that, that's great. Otherwise, you put yourself around other people when you can, to whom you can talk about it, or with whom.
In this situation,
absolutely.
Whether it's, I can tell you the birth date that went along with this, my friend's dog, who had to be put to sleep, and whether it's the animal, whether it's the grandparent. Again, I never knew quite what to do when my mother's parents, I knew the dates that they had passed away. Do you bring that up? Do you say, hey, Mom, I'm checking up on you because I know what today means to you?
I would,
without question. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do that from outside of the family?
If you know that it's welcome and you know they are thinking of it, yes.
I have sent a card. I'm still thinking of you.
Yep.
I know this is a key day for you. Or you know this is the day your mother died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Be as direct as
and
that.
Birthdays, too, sometimes, depending on
holidays. And again, and so we come to the word, I choose the word holidays because I guess it's twirling around in my head. Mm-hmm. But birthdays, et cetera, what happens during the holiday times, because for many people, that's what it's about, is the gathering of families. And typically, depending on the size of the family, there are one to possibly, you know, eight or nine or so that have, that are still, you want them to be there. They have stories that go along with the celebration that should be happening. How do you do that? What are some of the counseling suggestions for the family to remain thoughtful yet happy?
What I say is to talk about it and make a plan. Every family is going to do it differently. You don't have to follow a plan. I've had families who set a place for the person who died. Mm-hmm. I've had other families who go away on a cruise and they drink to celebrate the existence of the person. So there isn't any right way, but talking about it, that death, that experience will be there on that holiday, and at some level you'll be aware of it.
But talking about it versus suffering silently altogether does seem to make a difference, and even just the process of the planning, because I do that with many of the students, especially who are going home having, you know, after a recent family loss. To make a plan is almost to articulate the feelings, and that sort of puts them down in a way so you can also celebrate the holiday, at least in part.
What about situations where you may not know that, again, we go back, I switched to the trauma counseling side then strictly from the bereavement. But there are incidents that happen, whether they're in your neighborhood, whether they are national. The one, two that come to mind are the shootings in Newtown, 9/11. I can remember where I was when the Challenger shuttle went down. You know, I'm on the steps talking with, folks that I live with or take class with at UVA. And trauma counseling for something where you are not, you have no specific attachment to people who are involved in that. Can you talk about that for a minute?
So how to process sort of the grief of an incident that touches us, and even though it's not ours personally. It wasn't
much more
wasn't
than I could
our
have
family.
Ever done.
Okay. It's hard because we do, you know, in our era of mass media where we see it live as it's happening, in many cases over and over and over, that can create some problems, I think, for people, especially if they have had a personal loss of their own. I'm struck by how inventive people are in dealing with it. They create memorials. They talk about it with each other. They write poems about it. They put flowers, right, you know, wherever they are. Or maybe they just go and give somebody near them a hug, I hope. But there's just, it's the same process. It's like, it's vicarious grief, I guess would be the technical term.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think we are all, if we're connected as a society, feel that sometimes.
Yeah, I think talking about it, acknowledging it, and also the acknowledging the feelings, our own feelings of lack of safety, mm-hmm. of fear. If we can express those things and make them, we can look at them more easily, right. And perhaps detach a little from them.
And then hopefully help put some of those feelings of unsafety down, because you can't constantly focus on what's wrong right. with the world. It will make you crazy, I think. Mm-hmm. So you grieve it, you acknowledge the loss of those people, and then
you move on to something that is perhaps
and
more
then you
positive.
You celebrate their life too.
Exactly. That yeah. absolutely. Yeah.
11:51 here on the Wake Up Call. Again, our guest today, Margaret Edwards, trauma counselor at the UVA Women's Center. Rennie Bond, she's with the Piedmont Hospice of the Piedmont. It is 11:51 here on the Wake Up Call.
WNRN and Blue Mountain Brewery present the Red Wing Roots Music Festival, July 12th through 14th, at Natural Chimneys Park in Mount Solon, Virginia. Hosted by the Steel Wheels and featuring Del McCurry Band, Sam Bush Band, Tim O'Brien, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and J.D. McPherson. The full lineup and tickets can be found at redwingroots.com.
And WNRN's support of local music includes 2 hours of the best of local and regional artists and bands. Join our volunteer host, Jess Martin, Tuesday nights at midnight for WNRN's Locomotive. This week, Jess will be featuring bands who play the WNRN Locomotive stage at the Tom Tom Founders Fest. It's the Invisible Hand, the Judy Chops, and Yankee Dixie. Discover the best local music at WNRN's Locomotive, Tuesday night, midnight, brought to you by Bar Downers. All right, just a few minutes left. With our guests, Margaret Edwards and Rennie Bond, as we talk about grief. Please, what about when many people think of grief, death, there's always the burial, the church religious service, but there are a growing percentage of at least the U.S. culture that are non-religious. Have things changed, steps in grief, bereavement, trauma, have they changed in the last several decades as our culture becomes less religious?
I don't know if they've changed. I think we become more aware of alternatives, but I think they've always been there.
And there's still a core need, I think, to acknowledge the loss through a ritual, whether it's through a church service or another kind of memorial service, regardless of where it's held.
Yeah.
Whether it's writing an elegy or listening to a song that was meaningful to the person, the loss has to be acknowledged in some way for
exactly.
most people. And when they don't do that, I think that can create much worse problems with grief down the road.
Yeah, accepting the realness, the reality of mm-hmm. it, and the finality of it is
right.
part
as
of that
as uncomfortable as funerals can be.
Yeah.
Thomas Lynch is an author that I would recommend to anybody who's interested in that subject. He's a funeral director and a poet from Milford, Michigan, and he's written some great essays about this, as well as some very good and very funny, in some cases, poems.
I'm aware of folks who have the church burial, but the family is not particularly religious, but it's the, quote, proper thing to do. And then the minister, the reverend, does, I guess, what is in their faith required to do. And how do you make those two people match? Is this going back to the right thing to say, regardless? Is this the listening? Is this, you know, how do you make these two match? Is it possible?
I think it's up to the family and their tradition. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if they're lucky, they've even thought about it before the death. Right. But it's really up to them. It's not how we would have them do it correctly.
Exactly. And the best advice, if any, I'm allowed to give, I think, would be talk to the person leading the service to be sure they understand what you want.
And who the person
and
who was.
And who the person was, so that they're not up there winging it with maybe good intentions, but it falls flat.
Yeah.
Which we've all, I think, been to a few services like that.
Right. We got a caller here. Caller, you got a comment to make?
Yes, I just find that it's very helpful to, you know, whatever means a person chooses to have recording, photos, film of your loved ones, your pets, particularly pets. Look at those things. You know, it's healthy for your heart. It keeps your faith in love, and some people, I think, try too hard to bury their feelings or escape it, and maybe there is a time you need to take a break from grief, but I think it's good to embrace it and embrace the reason you have grief is there was a joy that's created this grief, and I just recommend everyone would try to, you know, acknowledge and go back to review.
Absolutely.
The subject of their grief, and it's I've found it to be extremely therapeutical and helpful. I've film of a dog I had for 20 years. Mm. When I find the world sorry, I can look at that. And, hey, I get back in check, and it keeps me stronger, you know, as a better person, I think. Whereas, unfortunately, I think some people, you know, bury that or run from it, and they get more angry or, you know, have health problems or what have you. But I think it's good to really recognize the joy and the love that you had, especially when you're at peace with the person or what have you that has passed on.
Thanks. That was wonderful. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
And we totally agree.
I can't disagree with the word he said. The important thing, I think, to remember, too, and to emphasize is grief is a normal process. Right. We all go through it. It's not just about death. It's about all the losses we've had. So if we can normalize it and celebrate the positive part of what we had, then I think he's absolutely right on.
Because honestly, it's also a celebration of all that we have had. You know, yes, we're sad and angry in some cases that we've lost it, but, you know, it's also.
11:57 on the wake-up call. Just a few minutes left as we finish up our conversation about grief with Rennie Bond and Margaret Edwards. Ladies, I've been pondering whether my sister's going to get mad at me for this or not, but hey, she's not living in town. So the day before one of my sisters is getting married, my grandfather passes away. So how do you celebrate an important part of your life at the same time that if it's natural to be grieving about a loss in your life?
I think that's very difficult, and I think you can do both. Mm-hmm. Even at the ceremony, you can do both, or at the celebration after the ceremony. It depends on the individual, though. I've known people who have not been told about the death until after the other ritual is over with. So,
Again, it's
no rule of thumb.
I would say I wish there were some rules about this, but they're just Miss Manners didn't write one, and I think she was probably right not to.
Yeah.
So I think people can do both. People do both all the time.
All right, just a few seconds left. I want to talk about where people can go for the group sessions, the counseling, some of the local places online. Margaret, at the UVA Women's Center, because it's more than bereavement in your role, it's also trauma. For those who are listening, how can they catch up with you and the UVA Women's Center?
So my contact information is on the UVA Women's Center website at www.womenscenter.virginia.edu. Because we are a fairly small service, if for some reason there's not room to be of help, we also act as a referral for either private therapy in town or other resources. So they can just give me a call.
And Rennie?
Hospice of the Piedmont, 817-6900. Ask for the bereavement department. We also do referrals if we can't handle it. We will tell you about the groups.
Right.
What we have to
offer. We have a, thankfully, I think Charlottesville is particularly lucky to have a very robust community of resources for people that have experienced these kinds of losses. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And thanks to both you ladies for being on the air today. I appreciate that. That was a very much of an educational topic for me, and I think that there's still a lot out there that I'd like to gather. We'll have this up as a podcast online. Again, go to the Hospice of the Piedmont website. An incredible amount of information. I love the Horizon Quarterly magazine. I got a lot of information from that. Next week, we'll be back. We'll have the editor-in-chief of the Cavalier Daily. I hope to know you're back then. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Angie Cruz. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.